Okay, welcome everybody. On behalf of University Staff Advisory Committee, thanks for making time today to join us and visit with President Gee. And also thanks to any of you who are streaming live. We have it available on the internet, so email in your questions. And here quickly, I'll turn it over to our president. But any questions, comments, feedback, anything, we'd love to hear it. And President Gee would love to hear it. So I'll quickly turn it over. President Gee.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Gosh, I like this podium down here. You know, they generally have it up. Well, there's the old one up there. They generally have it up there. Amy, thank you very much, and thanks to staff council for arranging this. Let me tell you what we're doing. You know, every year there's been a tradition of the university that the president speaks to the faculty. And I do that. And I've given that speech. But what I've decided to do starting last year is the fact that I also felt it was important for me to have a chance to speak to the staff just directly. An opportunity for you to engage me in any kind of conversation. But I promise you I'm not going to give a long speech. I'll kind of go across the highlights because many of you have had the opportunity to read what I had to say and some of the issues that I outlined in that faculty conversation. And so what I really want to do is try to get to your questions as soon as I possibly can, but I thought I would do so by making some points from my speech that I gave earlier to the faculty, but directed specifically to the staff, and also to make certain that that any issues that may have not been clarified there, or any questions that you had, that you might be able to get clarified here. But most importantly, thank you all for coming out. I really appreciate it. I know we're on the web, which means that there are a lot of people out there looking for all of you. Hello, I'm here, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful that you would come and listen in. And Amy, thank you very much for your leadership and for all the leadership that we have from our from those who spend great amounts of time and energy representing the staff of this institution. I'll just say this at the very beginning. The university takes its staff advisory council very seriously, and its representational role is enormously important in terms of the quality of the life of this institution and the quality of life in each and every member of our staff. To start off with that, let me just talk a little bit about the context of the university at this moment. If one were to think about Ohio State as a business and that we were a Fortune 500 company on Wall Street, we would have a buy on us. By that I mean that even in tumultuous times, the institution is doing very, very well. The excellence of our students, both at the undergraduate and graduate level, has never been higher, and our numbers have never been higher. We're at 63,217 students today. As I said, everyone gets on and off the bus. That's an extraordinary number. We do not want to be that big, as you well know, but we have a tremendous demand for the opportunity to be at this institution, and increasingly so. And as I say, we've now moved into that most selective criteria, particularly among public universities, but among any institution at this moment. If one takes a look at the talents and recognitions and quality of our faculty and our staff, I think without a doubt that the institution is doing very well in that regard. We have as our number one goal the re-recruitment of our faculty and staff. One never does well about hiring unless one makes certain that you are keeping the talent here, because if it becomes a circular notion that people leave and then people come because people are unhappy or because we haven't done a good job of recognizing and developing talent internally, then we have really lost the occasion to celebrate. And so it's very important that we continue to focus on the re-recruitment. At the same time, we continue to hire very well. And I want to underscore that we're one of the few institutions in the country that continues to hire. As you know, most institutions, if I were the president of a vast number of institutions in this country, I was just reading today about Princeton letting a number of people go, about Dartmouth letting a number of people go, the University of California has let thousands of people go, Stanford has let hundreds, if not thousands, of people go. I can go on down the line. And the very fact that we have been blessed to be in a position where we can continue to nurture and hire folks. In fact, I am the only university president that I know who has been able to provide a modest salary increase to both faculty and staff. I'm the only one that I know in this country, if you think about that. So we have much to celebrate, but that celebration requires us to also do a number of things. And then, obviously, we have to continue to focus on our excellence in our teaching, our research, our healthcare, our community outreach. those are issues that are enormously important to who we are as an institution. We're not simply this massive public university in the middle of Columbus, Ohio. We have a calling, a responsibility, and an unerring effort to make ourselves better, and certainly focusing on the things that we should be doing. We should teach well. We should do great research. We should invent, we should discover the cure for cancer and write the great American novel. We should provide great health care, and many of you and our staff are really at the front lines of doing that. And obviously our community outreach functions, embracing our communities both here and afar. Again, our staff have an enormous responsibility for that. The reason that I can say about the health of the institution compared to most others is the fact that we have an unusual combination of political victories and political support and state support that very few people have had. The state of Ohio, as you know, has had tremendous economic problems, as have most states. But we have a governor and a bipartisan legislature that have been fiercely supportive of this university as an investment vehicle. And I say that every day, and I say that every place. I'm grateful for that support, and we are grateful for that support. But, of course, that also presents an unmatched opportunity for the university, and it represents also a responsibility, because, therefore, as I say to everyone, we have been given that support. We have this moment in time. We have this opportunity. But what it means is we cannot do business as usual. We can no longer think of ourselves as big state university doing the kinds of things we've been doing. You, each of you, have responsibility to make us better, but each of you have responsibility to reinvent yourself, to reinvent the way that we do our work, to get rid of our bureaucracy. And by the way, when I talk about that, people kind of get a little concerned and say, well, it means bureaucracy, it means me. No. Those are bureaucrats. To get rid of the bureaucracy means to make our process simpler so that all of you can do your jobs better, because many of you are encumbered by the fact that you have to sign 14 different pieces of paper rather than just one, that you have to go through a variety of audit hoops, that we get all of these kinds of requirements which take you away from doing the work that you should be doing, and putting an enormous expense on the institution. And we have to make certain that we think totally differently about the nature of this institution over the next 10, 15, 20 years. As I've constantly pulled out, say to many of you, and that is the fact that we are an institution that is very traditionally organized. We need to think much differently. We need to move from these vertical organizational structures to much more horizontal, so that you can move across the institutions as staff members, as faculty members, as students, so that we become one institution, and in so doing, that we provide opportunities you haven't had up to this point. Many times we treat our staff like McDonald's hamburgers, the same pickles, lettuce, cheese, and you're treated the same. And if you get outside that box, if you want to try to do something differently, then sometimes you're not only not recognized, but you're put back into a box. I think that's wrong. And so it requires us to reconfigure ourselves to create these horizontal structures to reward collaboration. Instead of say you can't do that, we ought to say we must do it, and to discover how to be both big and entrepreneurial. And the entrepreneurial side is enormously important. Creativity and energy will be the sustaining force for the institution. We have to expand our partnerships with Patel, with corporations, with communities, with other universities. We can no longer think of ourselves as this isolated, arrogant entity surrounded by Lane and Hyde, but rather the future of our institution is going to be the future of collaboration. Our best partners are going to be the community colleges. I talk often about the fact that our most powerful partners are the community colleges. They are the most important institutions in the country. We're very important as a major force for good in this country. This institution in and of itself stands very tall. But the front door to the American dream for so many of our citizens is really found through the community colleges. We need to celebrate that, recognize that, and partner with that. This new program, by the way, that we've developed, of a pipeline to medical school that we started with at community college, is a fabulous program. People who had never dreamed that they could be doctors are now going to be able to make that transition through that pipeline. That notion of it no longer being K-12 and then undergraduate, then graduate, or K-12 and then community college and then big state university or whatever, we've got to think about ourselves as a continuum, K-life. Maybe pre-K through life is important, and so I want you to think about that. So to achieve to achieve our aspirations, I think we need to focus on two things. One is we need to focus on talent, on human talent, on the human equation. And the second thing is we need to focus on our culture. The talent issue, I think, is enormously important because I talked about the fact of re-recruitment, hiring, etc. I tell the story, and some of you have heard me tell this, about the fact that when I came to Vanderbilt University in 2000, I set this rather audacious goal, the fact that I wanted Vanderbilt to be one of the 100 best places in America to work, as designated by Fortune magazine. There's never been a university in the 30 years that they've done this that has ever made it onto that 100 best places to work. And I left Vanderbilt, and they reached that goal. I was really mad. But it shows that it can be done. And now our goal is to be the first public university to reach that. And what that requires us is to think about the human equation. It's not simply about coming at 8 o'clock and leaving at 5 o'clock. It's about community building. It's about how we support each other. It's about how we support public schools. And it's about how we support daycare centers and how we provide opportunities for young families. It's how we deal with the divorced mothers or the divorced fathers who have issues. I mean, it is about community building. And it's about that human equation, about that talent that will make us a special place. I want... my goal is to make certain that when someone comes here, that they are as happy the day that they retire as they are on the day that they are hired. And that's a real challenge, because sometimes institutions turn you into being cynics and beat a lot of your creativity and energy out of you. We can't allow that to happen, which means that we need to constantly focus on the human talent side of the equation. The second is our culture. Very simply, as I said, we're bureaucratic, we're massive, we do not have a lot of energy and creativity in terms of some things we need to do, and most importantly, we're very risk-averse. Gee, you can't do that. Well, why? Well, there might be someone looking over our shoulder who might slap our hands. I you know what I've done to the senior officers of the university is I have said to each one of them that I want them to tell me next year in their evaluations for me what they have done and failed at, because they've taken a big risk. And if they haven't taken a risk and they haven't failed, they haven't done their job. Right, Larry? Isn't that what, I mean, we put that into every requirement. If you don't take risk and you don't fail, you don't make a mistake, you don't do something, then you're not doing your job. It's not about safety. It's not about security. It's about creativity. And I think that's so enormously important. We have to change our culture. Our Sam Delaney process, I think, is very healthy. There are 40,000 people, though. It requires energy and constant conversation all the time for us to think about how we can make our culture better, how we can make it a place in which people reward each other, in which people celebrate with each other, in which people do not view themselves as being in a box, but rather in a hot air balloon. Me, no, rather that they view themselves as being able to float and move and there's a sense of agility. So we need to use those Sam Delaney. Tools, and we need to expand them. Many of our staff members have taken on the responsibility to be trainers and to work in that regard, and I appreciate that. But that culture is a pretty simple one. It needs to nurture our staff and our faculty. It needs to tolerate risk, as I said. It needs to value varied contributions to the whole. We cannot think of, we need to think about individuals not as just their contribution, but the varied contributions that we can make, and it's all about the whole. These will allow our staff to change professional paths. It needs to celebrate our shared successes and to celebrate them mightily. So, to achieve the university's great potential, we must move quickly and strategically. We must change the way that we operate. We must change the way that we interact with each other. And we must not change for change's sake, but rather we must change to accomplish greater things for students, for our communities, for our state, our nation, for our world. And I say that because I am the president of The Ohio State University, one of the largest, most complex, most interesting, most powerful institution in the country. So we can have that aspiration, each of us, that if we do what we do well, we can not only change this institution, we can change the way that that things are done in this state, in this nation, and we have an enormous responsibility to those 11 million Ohioans and beyond to provide a better day for them and for their children and for each other while we're doing it. Saying that, I really am open to any kinds of questions you all may have, okay? Let's start. Come on. This is pretty easy. I apologize. Even though we played the Aggies of New Mexico State, I still yelled a lot the other day, okay? So I'm going to step out here. Let me hear questions. Yes. And by the way, this is Las Vegas. Put said here stays here. Sure, we've got the web and everything, I know. Yeah, you can. Anyway, go ahead. Yes, ma'am.
I happen to be the fortunate person to have two parents, and I actually am responsible for helping take care of them, and not just a little, but a lot. And I really haven't seen or heard of any help for, I know there's kind of child care help or child direction for people who are taking care of children and working mother support group, but I don't see elder care assistance or anything like that. It may be out there, but and I may not be aware, but what help is there for people who are taking care of their parents?
You know, let me say two or three things at the 10,000-foot level, and then, Larry, if you want to try to answer some of those specific questions. First of all, we have one of the most extraordinary benefits package of any institution in the country. As you well know, most institutions have cut back dramatically on their benefits package, things that you can do and things you can't do and a variety of other things. I don't say that to be negative or positive. I just think that we are very blessed and we have maintained that. Fortunately, because of the fact that we have one of this nation's most important academic medical centers right in the center of our campus, and we've moved to basically a one-provider system, we have an opportunity to keep our health care costs at a level that has not escalated as compared with most other places. So, number one, we do have great benefits at this institution. Number two is the fact that we're constantly evaluating what those are. In my first time here, we really had very little educational benefit opportunities, and now we really have those, and they're growing, and we're continuing to grow those. We put a lot of time and energy into child care. We still have a lot of problems there. We're thinking very creatively about child care in terms of what we do for in terms of combination with corporations downtown and other places, a way for us to grow our child care without having to continue to build large facilities, an opportunity for us to be helpful in that regard. In terms of elder care, again, I think it's one of those things that is very much on the mind of people who are in human resources, but as to what particularly they are thinking about, they're going through we're going through this high-performance culture examination of how can we really make what we're doing in terms of human resources a capacity-building operation rather than simply a holding pattern. And in that regard, Larry, I don't know if you want to say anything about that.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, or you can move here to the...
Thank you. It is true that we do have a work group, a dependent care work group that's really focusing on child care first. I have to be honest about that. We've got challenges around child care. We've got challenges with, you know, an aging facility. We've got some things that need to be done. We need more creative approaches to, you know, staff who need drop-in care, students who need drop-in care. We're really focusing on those first. Then the Dependent Care Task Force will look at expanding our options around, or looking to see what we can do to expand options around elder care. A few years ago, we did develop support mechanisms for those. If you call our office, we can tell you what those are, but we've not taken the next step of expanding those till we really focus on child care, and I'll just be honest about that. That's our priority first, then move to elder care.
Questions? Yes. You're very good at passing that microphone.
I heard you say a little bit about partnering with junior colleges
right.
And other organizations.
Community colleges, right.
Community colleges, right. Excuse me. Has there
That's
been
right.
any breakthrough on some sort of tuition reciprocity agreements or any kind of agreements with them to exchange classes and students?
Well, let me just make it very clear. First of all, we're not going to send people off to the community colleges to get an education per se. That's not in our best interest. We, you know, first of all, we want you to take courses here for improvement. And we want you to get a degree here, if you can possibly work your way through that, and I think that's important. I think that what we're talking about, and again, Larry can comment on that, is when there are gaps in our educational training, or when there are gaps in what we need to do, then we'll take a look at our colleagues in the community colleges to provide that for our staff, based upon the needs that we have in terms of their growth. So the educational opportunity to come and get a degree and grow is very clear in this institution. It takes a while, but I've had my picture taken with a number of staff members over the last year who have come in, who have worked, have gotten their degree, and we've all had a kumbaya moment. But in terms of with the community colleges, it's really going to be very work-related specific that we're going to do that. Questions? By the way, is it all right for me to move around? I'm not being filmed or anything, am I? Is it all right, Amy, for me to move around? Okay, great. Great. Questions? Yes. Grab that. There you go, right there.
President Gee, I've heard you speak to the athletic department before about the challenge of how many hours you have students in class, mm-hmm. 18 hours, but really the student
experience.
A week is 168 hours. What's the parallel for staff, for us? People work part-time, people work full-time. Sometimes that's more than 40 hours. What's our responsibility beyond, what we do just normally to engage in the university? Because I think what you're talking about, breaking down barriers, being more in touch with students, I would think is a big part of that.
Yeah.
Being in touch with what else is going on in the university and other areas, sometimes we can be very, isolated in our own areas.
Well, I think that's enormously important, and I appreciate that. See, I believe this. I believe that there's kind of an arbitrary distinction that is made. The staff do great work, but they do staff work. And the faculty do great work, but they do faculty work. I consider this an important concept that we're all teachers here, including our students. Every one of us has a teaching responsibility. I think some of the best teachers that I have seen at the institution happen to be some of our coaches, for example, and our police officers. They have to deal with 18 and 19-year-olds, and you could treat them like cops. Okay, you broke the law, and we're going to put you in jail, and we're going to send you off. Instead, what our officers are really trying to do is be really good teachers. Okay, you're an 18-year-old, you did something stupid, don't do it again, and by the way, we're going to love you. And we're going to have this as a teaching moment. I think that, I guess the point that I'm trying to make is the fact that everyone in this room has responsibility to our students and to each other to be really good teachers. Because that's what we're about. I mean, the essence of this university is one thing, and that is the fact that we're about ideas. And the most important idea that we're about is how do we teach others to learn and grow from the ideas that they have. So I welcome, and so many of our staff members do this. I was just with our student life people, Tracy Stuck, who runs the union and her team, and we were talking about undergraduate student life and a variety of other things. And I spent a lot of time with those young people in the union staff positions. And, their life starts at about 11 o'clock at night. And by the way, we're not paid any differently than anyone else. I mean, their life starts at about 11 o'clock at night. How do I know that? Well, because I'm out there with them, but I'm paid a hell of a lot more money than they are. And the kind of energy and commitment that they have, what they're about is they're about making a difference. I think every one of us should be and will be about that. And I think that the point you're making is a powerful point, and that is that it's not simply about your work. It's about the teaching moments that you will have when you run into other people, whether it's your staff colleagues, whether it's your faculty colleagues, or most importantly, whether it's our student colleagues, because this is 168-hour-a-week experience. It's not 15 or 18 hours in class and then do whatever you want to do, or it's not 40 hours work and then do whatever you want to do. I think that the university has been a blessing to so many of us, and we need to try to return that blessing as much as we can to ourselves and others. Appreciate the question. Questions? Yes, sir.
I've heard a lot about...
Okay, wait a second. We're going to have to... We're not going to let you talk, and if you don't ask really a good question, we'll let you talk anyway. Love you.
I've heard a lot about one university, mm-hmm. and so I want to know your vision and how does it embrace staff in the future?
Well, gosh, That's both a dissertation and a momentary issue. The issue is this, and I've used this analogy before. I'll say it again. Ohio State is not a university. Ohio State is a confederation. It's a collection of colleges and programs connected by a heating plant. We have no common vision, no common values, no common direction, no common approach. And what we do is we have a lot of competition. Budget models that say if they do well because of the fact they get more students in class or in their college than these people, then we shift money around based upon kind of competition. And the notion of one university is the fact that the power of Ohio State is this, its size. Also, the detriment of Ohio State is this, its size. If we're simply this big institution with huge colleges that do their own thing, the colleges could just as soon be in Los Angeles, Sacramento, and Boston. But if we think about the university as being one institution, whereby you can connect those powerful entities, where you get the physician and the philosopher and the physicist laying down like lambs instead of like lions, and where there is this cooperation and invention and creativity, then our size becomes our most powerful weapon, and that's exactly what it is. It's about taking advantage of the fact that we are the largest, most complex university in America to make us also the most powerful institution. Because right now, we're kind of like this big behemoth with our hands and our tied behind our back. We don't use our size and our scope and our power to like a weapon. We use it in many ways to our detriment. And the impact on the staff, of course, will be enormous because all of a sudden, instead of you being relegated to having a staff position inside this confederation, and your job is to be part of one part of the confederation, all of a sudden you'll have a lot more limitless opportunities to be able to do things as staff members, both in terms of your work, in terms of the opportunities that exist for you to make a difference at the institution, in terms of creative energy and task forces and activities that go outside of your normal learning circle. And I think that that's what's important. It's a powerful idea, but it's going to take a while for us to get there because it's so embedded in academic concrete that some of you have heard me say this before, but the most discouraging thing that I hear at Ohio State, of which I hear very few discouraging things, is you can't do that, Mr. President. And I say, why? And they say, that's because that's not the way we do things at Ohio State, as if William Oxley Thompson himself decreed it on some plaque somewhere. That's just nonsense. We can do what we want to do, but we have to think much differently about how we organize ourselves and how we act together as a community. And that's the one university concept. I could go on and on and on, Richard, but I'm not going to. But nonetheless, that's the sense of where we are. Questions? Do you have some email questions? Hey, why don't you read them?
Why? Okay. Mic doesn't seem to be on, but that's...
No, it is. It's on now.
Is it on now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can't you hear it?
I think he turned it off.
Well, maybe it's just because I'm down here in the bounds.
Well, how about now?
Oh, whoa. The voice of God.
All right.
The voice of God.
We give all the staff a raise.
Okay. I already did. How about me?
Thank you. I'll just read some of these questions. These are not mine. I received a well above grade on my review in August, and my pay raise was 2%. I know the faculty received more than staff. Where does the, quote, recognition, reward, and retain come in for staff? Again, not my question.
Well, no, and that's a good question. Well, first of all, we're all in this together. Again, I will remind whoever wrote that they're one of the few people in higher education in this country that received any recognition whatsoever. Second of all, we have a process that we go through in which it's a pooling process. The pooling dollars were the same for our faculty and for our staff, and so therefore, in the 2%, if they got a 2%, it was because there, in the pooling arrangement, the determination was made that they wanted to pool themselves slightly differently. But there was no differential made. There are faculty members who received nothing. There are faculty members who received 5%, 6%, or 7%. That's the same way it was with staff. We are a meritocracy. Let me just say that again. We are a meritocracy. We do nothing across the board, nor should we. That's what differentiates a university from a number of other places. Questions?
Another email?
Yes.
Okay.
With the new focus on developing staff talent, how will our managers be held accountable for supporting staff in this initiative, such as funding, time away from the office, et cetera?
Yeah, I think that's very important, and that's one of the things that, that Larry and his high-performance culture, you may want to even answer that a little bit more, but let me just say this before he screws it up, that precisely, and that's really what Sendelania is about. That's what our culture change is about. You know, I talk about the fact that if we organize ourselves vertically and if we organize ourselves horizontally and reward people vertically, then we're never going to get where we're going to get because it's the same old thing. But a lot of that has to do with the fact that we have to get people who have leadership responsibilities to think of themselves as leaders and not simply as gatekeepers, and that requires us to hold people accountable. And in this cultural change that we're making, I don't want to talk gobbledygook, but in this cultural change we're making, that really is what it's all about. It's about developing a much different reward and recognition structure. If you saw, I went through this process, and the reason I think it's important, I just went through this very intricate, documentable process about my leadership as president of the university. And it was in this kind of public forum, too. I mean, it was awful to have to go through that in some ways, but nonetheless I did. But there was a whole level of accountability issues that were there, and that's the very same thing we're trying to do. We're trying to cascade that out. If it applies to me, it should apply to everyone, not because I am who I am, but because it's a leadership function of how we develop people's responsibility to deal with their colleagues. Well, you might want to respond to that.
The opportunity to screw up, is that what you said? Thank you very much. Yes, thank you for reinforcing that. But the one of the most interesting things that President Gee did when he came here, because I think he's looking for all kinds of creative ideas to make this work, and around culture transformation and around the reward systems, he attached all the senior HR professionals in all of the colleges and units to my office. As you know, we sort of have a history of we do things centrally, and we hope we do them well. We're decentralized to a great degree, and we hope colleges and units do things well. But this is a case of tying ourselves together and saying we've got to change the way the reward culture works, the accountability culture. We have to change the way it works. And we've called together all the senior HR professionals and had close discussions about that. President Yi spoke to them a week and a half ago directly about this so that we can figure out how we not only have the right sort of central policies, but how we make sure that this extends into the colleges and units and into the reward systems and accountabilities for the managers and supervisors there. I tell you, our senior HR partners are very excited about this, and it's a different approach than we've taken before. President Yi's idea, we're going to carry it forward. So that's how we're going to work on that one.
Yeah, we're going to move from being a totally disaggregated system, if you will, a confederation, use my word, to not be centralized. I do not believe in the Soviet-style command and control system. I think that we'd ruin the university if we did that. But we have to drive certain of these notions, including accountability and so forth, in a more centrally driven way so that there's a commonality in the way that we talk about this and the way that we approach it. And I think that will make a difference. I'll just use this on, let me use this on the fiscal side because I can talk about this. I started receiving all these complaints shortly after I came about different financial policies. We then went back and took a look at them, and what we discovered was the fact the university's policies were not horrible. They were not as progressive as I would like them, but it was the way that people were interpreting them, as because we had every fiscal officer out there would have their own interpretation. If we don't have some kind of common way to think about things and common approach, then we're going to get some people who really are very with it and some people who are just pretty non-accountable to the function of what we're trying to do. And that's what Larry is doing through the office and through this now dotted and solid line relationship so that we have commonalities in terms of our human resource values and directions, which will make an enormous difference, I think. You got any more emails? Or you got a question?
Sure. President Gee, I have a question about campus safety, and I want to provide some context to my question. Mm-hmm. Working in university housing, I have the opportunity, of course, to speak pretty directly with my students about making responsible choices, and I think most of us in this room can have that conversation with our students. The other opportunity that I have is I get to live on campus, and so I see campus life from sun up till sun down. And I get
and
to
beyond. Right.
Yep. Especially this past weekend. So, but I'm curious from that 10,000 foot perspective you're talking about, the conversations that are occurring between us as a university with the city of Columbus. I know we have some close partnerships, but you know, as a dad to be and having to live on campus, I want to feel safe walking my child around campus at night and knowing that my students are safe as well. So. Some context to that.
Let me provide a little context. Let me give you the context of 1990. I was hired in 1990. When I was hired, when I visited the campus, I came several times secretly. They would bring me in off Olentangy down right down here, and I'd come onto the campus. And say, this is a cool place. The university residents, I live in subsidized public housing too, as you know, and a little different from what you do, but nonetheless, we're all in it together. I came my first day to work from the university residence, which is in Muxley, and I drove down, what is it, Summit or Fourth? That's down Fourth Street. I drove down Fourth Street. I felt like I was in Fallujah. We had done a horrible job as a university. We were the world's worst neighbor. I'm not certain if there are any neighbors of any in any university town that were worse than we were. We just simply were arrogant. We said our responsibility was laying in high. We just sucked the oxygen out of the east of High Street, particularly for a very long period of time. Crime was way up. I mean, it was very unsafe for a variety of other things. We've put a lot of time and energy and spent millions of dollars, which we should have spent in the first instance to keep the neighborhood safe, to kind of start recovering. You fast forward to 2009. See, I have the opportunity to have been gone for 10 years. Clintonville is really a very livable place now. Obviously, Victorian Village is a wonderful area. And our east of High Street, we've invested a lot, and we're starting to get some returns on that. I think we need to accelerate that. And this is one of the reasons that we were talking about the fraternities and sororities as an example. One of the places for us to start investing in a number of ways to get seeds planted, but also to bring faculty and staff, in particular younger faculty and staff, back into the neighborhood so that we really do develop a community. One of the reasons that we're moving to require freshmen and sophomores on living on campus is so that we get them tightly knit to the institution so that as juniors and seniors, they really feel compelled to stay in the neighborhoods, and then we start creating housing and opportunities for them to really be here that's university-sanctioned, if not university-controlled, and a way for us to really improve the neighborhoods. But if one takes a look at the statistics from 1990 to 2009, I mean, this is nirvana compared to the way it was. Many of you can remember that. Well, not many of you. You're too young, most of you. But 1990, it was a war zone out there. And even though we have some crime problems, relatively speaking, this is a much safer place. You know, I walk the streets fairly regularly without an armed guard late at night, and feel very safe about it. We do have moments, but nonetheless, we're working very hard on it. But it's a 168-hour a week problem that we're really trying to attack. And I appreciate the fact that those of you who live here get it every day and get an opportunity to really think about how we can make a difference. Yes.
Hi, Dr. Gee. I work for health services for students, and in service areas, you know, sometimes you don't have the financial stability, and also I see that a lot of the sports, you know, events and sports-related facilities are very well funded, and also, I mean, because I think that it generates a lot of money. And it's sometimes very difficult to work in an environment where I feel that that's my perspective, but we don't get a lot of support sometimes.
Get a lot of love, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And so as we move from excellence to eminent care for our students, I think these service areas are very important. And I wanted to, you know, get some your input on how we go about.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that sometimes some areas of the institution feel like stepchildren and are. And one of the things that we're doing is trying to go through this very consistent review. We've got a master planning process, as you well know, which is going to be further unveiled to the university through our Sasaki process of taking a look how do we improve the quality of life in all areas of the campus in terms of our physical facilities and in terms of how we organize ourselves to be much more effective and efficient and higher quality. And then obviously we're taking a look at programmatic changes where we can do some things. Sometimes units are either too small or they're sort of out there on their own or they're not in the right kind of configuration, so we're trying to figure that out. But student help, as we've discovered with the H1N1 virus and its impact, is an enormously important area of the institution. Sometimes we don't realize some of these real treasures because we just take them for granted. We're trying not to take anyone for granted, I can assure you. Questions? Anyone? Yeah, do you have another email?
Yeah, I have two more.
Okay, good.
Okay.
We'll answer them, then I'll get the heck out of here. No, just kidding you.
Goals to increase the effectiveness of student advising and career services were noted as an academic priority by Dr. Aludo. In what ways will the staff who serve in academic advising and career services be engaged in conversations looking at those areas?
Well, and Dr. Aludo has that very much as a major priority, and the answer is the staff who really do serve the students most often are the ones who should be engaged because they I always point out, about myself, this is just an example. I'm on the end of the food chain. For some reason, I always have a parking place. My lights are turned on, and as I say, I live in subsidized public housing. You know, it's I don't experience the same way, the world the same way that many of you do. And so, therefore, what we have to do is we've got to get the people who are experiencing the world and who have solutions. But we've got to make it so that people feel rewarded for it. See, sometimes, and this is the no-risk environment, sometimes I'm afraid that people are afraid to speak up and say, well, we ought to be doing this. It's really silly what you're doing. We ought to be doing this because they say, well, gee, you know, if we do it, that might eliminate my job or something like that. I think what we have to do, we've got to get people to understand that there's plenty of opportunity for everyone. It's just the fact that we need to get people's input so we can get the right activity and right response taking place. So that would be that involvement of staff in terms of student advising is going to be enormously important, absolutely critical.
And the final question is the person who'd like to see or suggest a subsidized program with CODA for Columbus campus faculty and staff, similar to the one with students.
We've been talking about something like that. What are we doing about that?
I don't know.
I don't either. Stop asking such questions, okay? We'll find out. I know that there was some discussion.
Well, it is something that transportation and parking had been working on in the past in negotiations with CODA to try to figure out when we get student volume to the right level, which it seems we have, how do we then convert that into strong negotiations with CODA for something that benefits faculty and staff, particularly those, of course, who live in and around the university community. And so I don't know exactly what's happening with that, but I'll return to Jeff Kaplan and to Sarah and sort of ask about that and make sure and see if it's something we can spark up on our agenda.
Well, I know that we have been talking about it, and I think you're right. I think what they wanted to do is they tried this experiment to see what kind of ridership we got out of our students. If we could get it to a capacity, then we could think about increasing that to include faculty and staff. And so that's probably where we are right now, but we need to find that out. So any other questions of anyone? Yes. Oh, let's grab that. I'm sorry.
Hi, Dr. Gee.
Hi.
I was just curious as to plans for our regional campuses and how they fit into the big picture of the One University plan.
Well, we have six front doors. And I don't mean to, make a slogan here, but I view that our regional campuses, at first I call them the engaged campuses. I don't like the word regional. It sounds like prison or something. But anyway, I view them very much as critical to the growth of the institution, both in terms of its quality, its message, and its opportunity. I think that the question we need to ask ourselves, and I have been threatening to do this, and I say this to my regional campus colleagues, to those extended campuses, because we just have them very high on our radar screen with everything else we've been doing. We haven't quite gotten to the point of having a discussion. What is it exactly? How do we organize them to be even more successful? And so the question we have to ask is, what do we do about student housing? Do we think about certain of the campuses having a very distinctive quality in terms of saying focusing on science or focusing on humanities or focusing on other kinds of programs? In other words, do we really think differently about them in addition to the power of what they're doing? But any growth that we have at this institution is going to occur on its extended campuses. Those are going to be the ones that really will see the kind of growth and outreach for the institution that's important. So the answer is they are important. The question is how do we sort of organize them in a way that they can be even more powerful, I think, is the ultimate question we need to ask ourselves. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my time to leave, and it's your time to enjoy yourself. And so thank you very much for being here today. I appreciate your good work and all that you do. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.